Rat Pack, where you at?
Hey, what's going on? It's Friday, August 23rd. This is The Rant. I am Jeff, and man, oh man, Christmas Eve, day before the biggest fantasy football draft day of the entire year. And you know, I haven't done this for a while, but let's do it. Let's cue the Europe, the final countdown. Let's do it.
It's the final countdown.
Ooh. So good, isn't it? All right, we got to cut this off. All right, sorry. Yeah, I could not get the rights to the real song, so we just chose a really crappy cover there. Sorry to do that to you, but it is the final countdown. I got a draft tomorrow on the farm, man. I'm making the brisket. I'm doing the coleslaw. And I've said this before, man, the coleslaw that I make has converted a lot of people over from I hate coleslaw to give me more of that coleslaw. And so tonight, like, this has been asked, I'm going to say at least 50 times this week that I share the recipe. Well, I'm going to share the recipe in the FTN Discord chat. So see, it pays to be a member. It's not just fantasy football that we're talking about there. We're talking about serious life matters. Coleslaw, baby. So I'm going to do that. But yeah, get in over at FTN. If you have a draft tomorrow, if you have a draft next weekend, I'm updating cheat sheets first thing in the morning tomorrow so that everybody's going to be all set up and ready to roll. You know, I need the cheat sheets updated from you personally, and so you're going to get them as well. All 16 of them updated fully for drafts tomorrow. FTNFantasy.com, promo code RATPACK for 10% off. Today on the podcast, just want to take a look at what we saw yesterday. There wasn't a ton to take away from last night's preseason action, but a couple takeaways. Then I want to talk about the Pittsburgh and New England quarterback situations, because technically speaking, Pittsburgh isn't resolved yet either. So those are the two kind of up in the air situations here heading into this final weekend of preseason football. Just give you the latest there and my thoughts on what's going to happen. We really don't have to handle these quarterback situations in one quarterback leagues, but how you could potentially attack in Superflex, and there are a variety of directions we can go in there. I'm also going to get to more emails. I want to clear the inbox today. There's like 15 of them, so I'm going to rip through those as well on the podcast. Let's talk about last night, though. The Chicago Bears are undefeated. Now, it's the preseason. I kid a little bit, but honestly, they've played really well in the preseason. The team looks like it is going to take a step forward this year, and that's fun, man. This is it's a very lively team. It's a very easy team to like with Caleb Williams there and company, all the wide receivers. Of course, none of those guys played, so no major takeaways on that front. Velus Jones had a pretty big game, 13 for 111 and a score. I think his versatility keeps him on the team. Tyler Scott had a good game as well, 6 for 99 on 9 targets. He had a really nice preseason. He'll be buried on the depth chart for sure, but interesting roster depth for them. And if you're in like super, super, super deep dynasty leagues, maybe like worth a deep spot on your bench, but that's about it with him. Moving over to the other side, really nothing, with the one notable exception of I still don't think Kadarius Toney makes this roster, which is kind of crazy when you think about it. But here we are. Here we are. So I would say that's probably the biggest thing I'm looking out for there. Otherwise, pretty much all the starters and a lot of the key backups were sitting in this one. Moving over to Indy and Cincinnati, well, we did get starters for Indy. Anthony Richardson was out there. He did throw a pick six, but he also had a touchdown pass to A.D. Mitchell. Adonai Mitchell getting in the end zone. 2 for 18 and a score for him. Like Jonathan Taylor, we saw a little bit of him. We, you know, again, saw a little bit of Richardson. None of my evaluations change here on these guys. The one thing that I will say about A.D. Mitchell is they went to, in the series that he was out there, they went to two wide receiver sets four times. He was on the field three of those four times, and Alec Pierce was on the other one. Now, granted, Alec Pierce was out there for the first, but still, there's a good chance that when Josh Downs comes back, A.D. Mitchell just immediately leapfrogs Alec Pierce. I love the upside. He's got a you know, he's got that downfield ability with Richardson's big arm. A lot of that bodes extremely well for Mitchell as like a late round dart. I do not mind taking a shot at him whatsoever. Over to the other side, none of the starters played. Nobody of importance played whatsoever. Jermaine Burton did play, got in the end zone, 4 for 56 and a touchdown. But here's the thing. The guys who didn't play at wide receiver were Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, Trenton Irwin, and Andre Yoshivas. So that means at best, Jermaine Burton enters the season as wide receiver 5. I get the sense that a lot of folks, if they do draft him in the late rounds, are going to draft him without realizing this, because a lot of people don't realize these sorts of things. They think that because a player is ranked in a certain range that he is going to contribute immediately. And that's not always the case, by the way. Like, I still like his ceiling. Like, I'm not trying to knock his ceiling, but I think that a lot of times the anticipation or the expectation, probably is a better word for it, expectation that a lot of people have for players isn't reasonable in the beginning of the season. And especially when you're talking late round guys, he's probably not going to produce. He's probably not going to play much in the beginning of the season. Now, that could change over the course of the year, for sure. It absolutely could. But in the beginning of the season, that's all the people pay attention to. And invariably, this happens every single year. Late round guys go out, they do nothing in the beginning of the season, and then you get dropped. So just be aware of that if you have your eye on Burton. If you have him in a dynasty roster, cool. You know, keep him there, see what we get with him. Eventually, there's going to be more opportunity on this depth chart because T. Higgins isn't going to be around after this year. You know, the things are going to change there for this team. But just make sure that you're aware Jermaine Burton is certainly not in line for a starting job to begin the season. That's what that preseason usage can tell us. Quickly over to, I probably should address Brandon Ayuk, Ja'Marr Chase, since I just talked about him, and CeeDee Lamb, and how we handle those guys in fantasy drafts tomorrow, tonight, Sunday, you know, any upcoming fantasy draft where we don't have news. There were a lot of rumors about Ayuk potentially being traded to the Commanders. I don't see that, but I at least understand why the rumors came about. But, you know, the problem that the 49ers would run into is if they trade him, and this is the argument I've been making all along, who do they replace him with? Like, obviously, they want a receiver in exchange. And they almost had that, honestly, with Cleveland. Like, Amari Cooper would have been freaking great. It would have been an awesome trade for them because, you know, you get an older player, you don't have to worry about that long-term deal. And obviously, the long-term deal is what's causing the problem here. And, you know, they would have moved on, but Ayuk didn't want to go to Cleveland. Okay. Would he want to go to Washington? Perhaps, because let's not forget that his one of his college quarterbacks was Jaden Daniels at Arizona State. That was where, before he went to LSU, that was where Jaden Daniels was. So you do at least have that component part, but that doesn't necessarily mean that Washington can meet the trade demands of San Francisco. It doesn't mean that Washington can pay Ayuk what he wants to make. So I think ultimately when it's all said and done, he is going to sign with the 49ers. And John Lynch even said, you know, they have a sense of urgency to get both Brandon Ayuk and Trent Williams back in the fold here. He said this yesterday. So I think it ultimately happens. I think CeeDee Lamb ultimately happens. I don't know about Ja'Marr Chase. And Ja'Marr Chase doesn't necessarily have to happen right now because he has an additional year. Unlike Ayuk and CeeDee Lamb, who are on the final years of their rookie deal, like it's the fifth year option of their rookie deal, Ja'Marr Chase is in the final year of his regular rookie deal, and then he still has the fifth year option next year. So it's a different scenario. Maybe that doesn't get done and then he just rejoins the team, but he has obviously made his point here and they're ultimately going to pay him. It's just not easy when you invest a lot in a quarterback. It's just the nature of the beast in the NFL. But let's go back to the original point here. You're up and it's tomorrow, draft day, or whenever your draft is, and you're looking at CeeDee Lamb at the top of your board, or you're looking at Ja'Marr Chase at the top of your board, or you're looking at Brandon Ayuk at the top of the board. Can you handle if they do miss time? Like, can you handle, because I have to acknowledge, there is a greater than 0% chance that one or more of these guys sit out time in the regular season. It is very possible. I don't think it's the most likely outcome, but it is, you know, I can't say 0%. Can you handle that? Like, if CeeDee Lamb just does not report It's week two. He has yet to report. Can you handle that? Or will that put you on tilt? And I can't answer that question for you. You know what I mean? Like, you have to answer that question. I know how I would handle it is, yeah, whatever. All right, I took the risk, right? No biscuit if you don't risk it, you know? But if it's something for you where you're like, man, see, I knew this was going to happen, and then you start getting upset or you get angry or whatever, and then you start making bad decisions as a result, I would probably just cross him off my board or move him way down, whatever point you would feel you would finally have the value breaking point for them. For CeeDee Lamb, is that back end of the first round? Because he's not getting there. Then you pretty much price yourself out. For, you know, Ja'Marr Chase, is it second round? Okay, he's not getting there. You're pricing yourself out. For Ayuk, I mean, heck, we may see him go in the third or fourth round this weekend, which I'm fine with, but you may not be. That ultimately comes down to you. Now, again, the likelihood of these guys sitting out, like, this is a totally different situation than Le'Veon Bell. Le'Veon Bell was not under contract. All three of these guys are. Le'Veon Bell was franchise tagged and he didn't sign it. So technically he wasn't under contract. He also wasn't a free agent. So the only outcome for him other than sign the tag or negotiate a new deal was don't play. These guys, since they are under contract, they're going to get fined if they don't play, you know, and those fines, like for CeeDee Lamb, he's getting fined right now for not being in camp. The Cowboys can ultimately waive that fine because he's on his rookie deal. If he wasn't, like Trent Williams, they can't waive those fines. But let's say he doesn't show up, he being CeeDee Lamb. They could decide that's conduct detrimental to the team and not waive the fines. Like, this is $50K a day. You know, that's $350K in a week. And, you know, then we're at 700 across 2 weeks. Then we're over a million across 3 weeks. And, you know, it just keeps ramping up from there. So I don't see that happening. Like, it's a very different scenario than Le'Veon Bell. Le'Veon Bell wasn't fined for not showing up because he wasn't under contract. These guys are. So totally different situation. So again, it comes down to your risk tolerance, and there is nothing wrong with adjusting a board if you're not comfortable. All right, let me just quickly rip through these quarterback situations. So Justin Fields, he came out and said to Brooke Pryor over at ESPN that he thinks he's done, you know, basically everything he can do to show what he is capable of. He technically is still behind Russell Wilson, and it sounds like Russell Wilson is going to start this preseason game. So could Russell Wilson ice it? Could this be a Raiders situation where maybe Wilson doesn't win the job? Like, Gardner Minshew didn't win the job. Aiden O'Connell lost it. Maybe Justin Fields could lose it. I don't think this is stable through the course of the season now, though. I do think that we're going to see Justin Fields start. So if you draft Justin Fields in a super flex, be aware of that. He'll be your third quarterback, likely. I sure as hell hope he's not your second quarterback in a super flex because you'd be too thin. Be aware of that. Like, it is a risky play that could pay off, right? Absolutely could pay off. That payoff could be early in the season. It could be in the middle of the season. Heck, it may not be until the end of the season. So just be aware of that if you're drafting him, because really your third quarterback is going to cover your rear end during bye weeks in super flex. And sometimes we'll give you a little bit of bang for your buck as well. Every so often, your third quarterback could outplay your top two. It could happen, you know, and that certainly would be the case if Fields gets on the field because he's an elite runner. Maybe not an elite passer, pretty far from it, but he's an elite runner, and that means something for fantasy. Now, the other situation, Drake May is, he's getting praise heaped on him by Alex Van Pelt, the offensive coordinator, but Van Pelt also said, right now, Brissett is our starting quarterback. He did not say he is the week one starter and Brissett is in the lead, but they have kept this door open. And when I see that, the sense that I get is they're keeping it open because they want Drake May to win the job. And probably, of course they do. They spent a third overall pick on this dude, but May, it's not a matter of, you know, kind of like, will he start? It's when will he start this season? He's going to start at some point. And I think it's going to be sooner rather than later. And this could be another one. I think he actually has to win this job. I don't think Brissett loses it. Brissett's too solid. Like, he's not great, but he's solid. I think Drake May has to go out and actually win the job in the preseason. He is draftable. He's a little bit risky, but he's definitely draftable in Superflex, like, no doubt about it. So that's kind of how I'm handling all of those situations. All right. So like I said, I want to clear the inbox. That's the goal for today. You guys have a ton of questions and I'm getting a lot of good feedback on these too. Like, I know sometimes questions aren't really the best content, but you guys are a lot more thoughtful, it seems like, than the common fantasy player. So shout out to you guys. And it feels like a lot of people are saying, yeah, I'm getting a lot from your answers to these questions. So let's get into it. Right after this, more questions from you. Let's clean that inbox. All right. We're going to clear this bad boy out. Completely empty inbox. You ready for this? Let's start. These are questions from you. Of course, the email is here, therantpodjr@gmail.com. And as we move into the season, let me just, you know, I'm going to just tell you this right now. If you do send start sick questions, I'm just not answering those. And it's not because I don't want to answer them. It's because I have them answered at ftnfantasy.com. All right. So rankings, I'm always starting the highest ranked guy. Always. Literally, not figuratively, literally always starting the highest ranked guy. So that is easy. You can get my start sit advice at any point by going over to ftnfantasy.com and just checking out the rankings. All right. So Scott said he has been an FTN subscriber for the last 4 years. That's awesome, man. You've been around for you're like an OG. He said it's helped him win his league after 24 years of frustration. Yo, that's awesome, man. I'm glad that you got over the hump. That feels so good. If you've had a drought or you've never won a league and you finally win it, so good. He said this year his league has 11 teams, 18 roster spots with no minimums or restrictions. I hate the restrictions, the maximums. Like you can only roster 5 wide receivers. Like that drives me nuts. That's such an old school thing. He said rosters are locked for the year, like in a best ball format. They play head-to-head games using the best ball format, the best 7 overall players per week with no restrictions on how many players per position other than only one quarterback is the roster. So the best could be 6 wide receivers and 1 running back. He said, my question is, what kind of strategy should I use? So since this is a home league, even though you're not making start sit decisions or waiver decisions, anything like that, I'm just going to use my regular redraft strategy in a league like this. You know, you're basically filling flex spots. So I wouldn't really worry necessarily about tight ends in this one. I'd just be loaded up with as much wide receiver and running back talent as I could. The one thing I would make sure I do here, though, too, is since it is a best ball format, I would want to roster 2 quarterbacks. That's maybe the only thing that would be slightly different from my redraft strategy. Just rostering 1 quarterback wouldn't work here. So that means even if you did get like Kyler Murray, let's say, or Jordan Love, I would roster a later round guy as well. But that's it. That's the only change that I would make there, Scott. Good luck to you. All right. Ziv checking in. Draft board 2.0. I already know what he's going to ask because he says it's a 14-team league with keepers. How do you adjust the board? And the answer is no, you don't adjust the board at all. But he said, I'm wondering if/how the draft board is affected by a 14-team league. Yeah, no impact here. So draft board 2.0 is meant to be used in any format. Now, the only difference, there's one, you know, distinction here is that if you have Superflex, but I actually have a board for 1 quarterback leagues and for Superflex leagues, but it is meant to be used in half PPR, in PPR, in non-PPR, in 12 team, 8 team, 10 team, 14 team, 16 team. It doesn't matter. It's a universal board. I'm in leagues of various sizes. I'm not in any 8 team leagues, but I'm in a couple 10 team leagues. I'm in a buttload, that's a technical term, of 12 team leagues. And I even have a couple 14 team leagues. So I wanted to create a board and they all have different scoring formats and whatnot that would work no matter what I'm in. And so that's the idea behind it. And remember, it's a board, but so it's a tool. So we have to actually use the tool. We have to apply strategy to the tool, which I outline in the game plan draft guide. Jeff with a G. Uh-oh. Problematic. UG Jeffs. I don't know what to do with you guys, man. He said Jamar Chase is his subject. He said, it seems like the Bengals don't want to pay Chase until they have to. Chase also seems unwilling to play without a new contract. With the wide receiver market continuing to rise, do you see his stalemate leading to the Bengals trading Chase and signing Higgins? No, I do not. I feel like that's a little bit too conspiratorial. The Bengals are unique in how they approach contracts. They do so slightly differently than a lot of organizations in the NFL, and I think that's part of the holdup here. I also think that they don't really need to get a deal done, so there isn't as much of a sense of urgency here. And when you clear out T. Higgins next year, you're clearing out a bunch of cap. We know T. Higgins is almost certainly not going to be back. They basically said as much. The organization has said you can't pay everybody. They're going to get something done with Ja'Marr Chase. It may not happen this year. You know, it's very similar to Justin Jefferson's situation. And it's not necessarily that Chase is unwilling to play. He's taking a stand because you're talking about one of the best young wide receivers in the NFL who deserves to be up at the top of the market. And he's not there right now. And he could, you know, also if they just say, all right, fifth year option, he's not going to be there next year either. So I think it's fine what he's doing. I know some people are going to critique and chastise and all that, but I don't have any issues with these guys trying to get paid. He's taking a stand, and there are very few ways that players can in the NFL, and he's using really one of the main ways to do so. But I don't see them trading him. James has auction strategy question. He said, thoughts on going two top five wide receivers, a top five tight end, and a top 10 quarterback with 50 to 60% of the budget. Oof. That's a little rough for me. That's a little aggressive. Honestly, I would rather get, if I can, I mean, this is a place where, you know, I talk about this tight end dead zone, which is really where I'm seeing like Evan Ingram, David Njoku, Dalton Schultz, Dallas Goedert, guys like that going in that range. But those guys go, well, maybe not Ingram, but definitely Njoku. I got Njoku for a song, man. In my auction, I got him for 5%. Like, I'll take that all day long. 10 bucks on this dude? Are you kidding me? So 5% saved me, you know, 5% extra at, you know, at tight end in that instance, if I was willing to go up to 10%. Boom, easy peasy. Quarterback, one of the biggest mistakes that I always used to make in auctions was overspending a quarterback. I to the point where I used to do this a lot for myself. I don't do it really anymore, but I used to title documents like do not, you know, in this case, overspend at quarterback in your auctions. Like so when I go back through my files to look up stuff, I see that. So yeah, I would not do this. Two top five wide receivers, you're going to way overpay on those guys. You're going to way overpay. You're going to blow way too much money here, and you're going to have such a thin roster as a result. The balanced approach, the value approach, gives you a much more well-rounded roster. Jason, he said he's got 99 problems, but Stroud ain't one. He said he has been running this league since there was an NFC Central. Nice. That's remember when the Cardinals were in the NFC East? It's like, I know how geography works. I don't know how they're in the East, though. Anyway, he said he's never missed the playoffs. He's also never won the championship. This is the second year they're doing an in-person draft, and for the first time, it's at his house. That's cool. I love hosting drafts. He said, I have to win this year and really don't want to miss on my first swing. In our league, we keep two players with a penalty. 12-team, 16-round draft. The only keepers he has of value are McBride in the 16th and Stroud also in the 16th would be his 15th and 16th if he kept them both. The rest of his team has no value other than Rashi Rice. I like Rashi Rice in the 16th round. Do I keep the elite and draft all running back wide receiver in the first 14 rounds? Well, possibly. I would be leaning possibly more towards Rashi Rice. I think, man, because the two positions I don't want to keep, you're trying to keep. Like, I would be curious of who else you have. I'd be curious of, are you doing that thing that a lot of people do where you're only looking at the rounds and you're not looking at the quality caliber of player that you're keeping? I would venture to say you probably have other options here. I would venture to say that probably part of the reason why you haven't won your championship is because you do things like this where you overthink things. That's just a, you know, again, quick psychological profile here, but I would want to know who else you have. That would be, you know, a big thing for me. Other keeper options. You may want to consider some other folks. I have a brief article on strategy for keepers over at ftnfantasy.com. You could search Jeff Ratcliffe keeper strategy and the article will come up. And then the paywalled part of the article is the keeper value chart, which could also help you out in making this decision. So check that out. But I would definitely want to know who else you have because I don't think those are your only options. John, checking in. He's got a round six running back question. He's been mocking. Sometimes we'll end up with five straight wide receivers. The problem is The wheelhouse tight ends are gone by then, and no quarterbacks have enough value to draft. Do I continue to draft another wide receiver? Yes, I do. Then I would have six wide receivers. I know you can't start six wide receivers, but guess what? Bye weeks, I'm good. Injuries, I'm good. If I miss on one of these guys, I'm good. I have a lot of depth. So usually that's what ends up happening. But I will tell you this, mock drafts aren't going to tell you what's going to happen on draft day. They aren't. They just aren't. Mock drafts are not really good simulations of what happens in real drafts. Like when you mock draft, usually you're mock drafting against ADP. Even if you don't realize it, like that's what it's based on, or site rankings, which tend to impact heavily ADP. So you're not really training against real human beings with emotions, human beings with biases, human beings with various levels of blood alcohol content, right? You can't simulate that stuff. So I don't find mock drafts effective at all as a training tool. I'd rather know players and strategies and then be able to apply them in actual drafts. So I would, yes, but then again, like I won't know until the draft actually plays out. I would venture to say you're going to see a wheelhouse tight end in round five. You are certainly going to see one there. You're going to see probably more than one available there. And that's when you have to start making the decisions, right? Steven said, what do I do with my wife and kids? I don't know, man. This is the title of this email. Oh, man. Every so often, you guys get me. You guys get me. Thank you, Steven. All right, he said he's a huge fan. Appreciate that, man. He's looking forward to watching CBS for the first time. Nice. You've never watched the show. My ninth year on the show. Thanks, Steven. But no, that's awesome. Definitely check it out. Sunday mornings, 8 to noon Eastern during the NFL season. That is their pregame show. Tops. He said, we have a family league he hosts. It's starting his fifth year. His brother-in-law and his family have won the first 4 years, so it's a bit frustrating. He said he coaxed his inexperienced wife and oldest children to manage two new teams in the league, selfishly hoping to increase our family's chance of winning. They're willing to entertain my obsession so we can all do something together. What do you recommend casual managers do to prepare for their first year in fantasy, and how they should manage their team during the season? He said, I want to avoid drafting or managing their teams for them. Yeah, that's probably a good idea. He said, do you recommend auto drafting? Should I give them a cheat sheet? What do you think about the autopilot feature? One of our competitors here, Fantasy Pros, fabs, trades, all that leaves him scratching his head. Well, you know, you ultimately have to push a little birdie out of the nest, right? They have to play the game for themselves. They have to learn the game for themselves. And it is a complicated game. But I think the number one thing that I tell anybody coming into fantasy football is, yes, there's a lot of excitement about September, but it lasts until early January if you're doing it right. It's a long, long, long season. And it means that every week, you know, worst case scenario, 14 weeks is still very long, but every week you're doing that same thing on Tuesday night, putting waivers in. You're doing those same things on Thursday night, start, sit, the same thing. Well, this year, week one, Friday as well. Friday night, start, sit, Sundays, start, sit. It's monotonous at times. And for a lot of people, they fade out in October after the allure, the honeymoon period of fantasy football draft season wears off. It's a long, long, long season, but I would have them draft for themselves. Of course, you know, there's plenty of like drafting 101, like, or drafting for dummies, like, and they're not dummies, but you know what I mean? That concept, there are those things out there. Have them read up on it quickly. You know, they probably are better suited just drafting off of rankings. Like the draft board is not necessarily something for a beginner level player, but just give them a set of rankings, let them draft, let them manage their teams. And then, you know, if they stop managing their teams, then they have to realize there are repercussions to that as well. But that is the number one thing. Hey, if you're playing in this league, make sure you realize you're committing at the bare minimum for 14 weeks of playing this game. And maybe, just maybe, you make it into the postseason. And then maybe, just maybe, you might make it to the championship game as well. That was a funny, funny title, though. All right, Ryan, favorite fantasy football seasons. All right, he says he's a longtime Rat Packer since I wish I knew how to quit CJ Pro Sites. That's a deep reference there. Ryan's paying attention. I make fun of that whole idea of players we don't know how to quit. With CJ Procise, that was my like quintessential guy back in the day. Man, I loved CJ Procise, and he had one good game. Give me that at least. But then it became this running bit forever, and I called him a broke back player. Like, I wish I knew how to quit you. That's the whole bit. The broke back guys, we all have them.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Yes, thank you. We all have those guys, but CJ Procise was one for me. He said, not a strategy-related question. Instead, he said, what have been some of your favorite or most memorable fantasy football seasons? Any fun years back in the day, crazy comeback seasons for your teams? Do you have any years that stand out? I mean, definitely 2011 stands out. I told the best man speech story, and I did win that year. It was Calvin Johnson was a big part of that year. I have like the horror story memory of Brian Westbrook kneeling at the 1 yard line and not winning a playoff game. That would have pushed me over the top and I would have gotten through. The Jeremy Hill rookie year. You guys remember the Jeremy Hill rookie year? It was basically all downhill from the rookie year on for Jeremy Hill. But what was that? 2014. So I had a points only league way back then. The league has changed over to head to head now. I'm still in the league, but points only. I had drafted Jeremy Hill and somebody had dropped Odell. And that was also the Odell rookie year. And somebody had dropped Odell. So I picked up Odell and I went from like, I think I was in third or fourth place for a good chunk of the season to catching up. But I still had a sizable deficit in the final week of the season. And I was in second place and Odell and Jeremy Hill went off in that game. I got to pull up the stats here because this is fun. That's actually a cool question. Like, yeah, we have these seasons that stand out to us. Okay. So yeah, he goes in week 15, that is the week before, this was what pulled me up into second place. He went 25 carries, 148 rushing yards and 2 scores. And then the next week he went 147 and a touchdown, and I believe it was a long touchdown. There was like touchdown bonuses. I'd have to look up exactly how long that one was. But anyway, regardless of the point, like that one really stood out to me. Like I remember quite vividly. Oh yeah, I just looked it up. It was an 85-yard touchdown. Quite vividly, 2014. That's a good question, Ryan. All right, let me go over to Dave. He said, how to use the 2.0 board with a tight end premium league allowing multiple flex players. So I've talked about this before. You can move players up, you can move players down based on your perception. Overall, tight end premium leagues do not really increase the overall value of tight ends in terms of where they're positioned on the board, but people are going to draft them earlier in your leagues. Now, in this league, he's got one quarterback, one running back, one wideout, and 4 flex. No required tight end spot. So I really wouldn't be looking at tight end much at all. Like if it happens, it happens. But I'll tell you what, that is a zero RB setup for me because you're only required to start one running back. So I would be hammering, absolutely hammering wide receiver in this draft. So yeah, I would not adjust the board whatsoever in that one. John checking in, tight end and trading question. All right, so he's got 2 questions. He says he loves the show. He's only been playing fantasy for 4 years, and the podcast, he started hunting for a podcast last year when he realized he sucked. Yeah, well, we all get to that point, you know. So yeah, awesome, John. Glad I can help you out. He says, all right, here's the first question. When going outside the wheelhouse for tight end, do I recommend looking for a tight end at a certain round after I draft a quarterback, or am I just targeting guys outside the wheelhouse and rankings with stable floors? No, not stable floors. It would be high ceiling for that. He said, or am I just overthinking late rounds? Yeah, you might be overthinking it a little bit. I have the guys on 2.0 who I want to target and then the guys who I want to avoid, you know, in terms of the 2.0 board at tight end in the late rounds if I have to go with a late round approach. So, you know, Bowers would stand out. I have a 10th round grade on him. I don't mind Pat Freiermuth. I don't mind Dalton Schultz. I don't mind Taysom Hill, if he is classified as a tight end. Luke Musgrave, Cole Kmet. I don't mind those guys. But, yeah, that's really all. Like, so I look across the board. If there's a quarterback who's standing out, then, yeah, it's the 10th round, and you're telling me Jordan Love's there or Brock Bowers, and I'm going to take Jordan Love if I haven't, you know, when I haven't, I know I haven't taken a quarterback at this point. So that's really it. Each situation is going to be different though. How do I approach trades in season? Do I have a trigger point for trading, like an injury or a flop at a position? No, that's the opposite. So, you know, I will tell you this, usually your instincts in trades, you should do the exact opposite of. Because most people, when a player is playing poorly, their first reaction is, I should trade this player away. Well, if your reaction is that, then everybody's reaction is going to be that, which means you're not going to get good value for that player. So ultimately, in redraft, there's one reason why we trade. It's to make our team better. It isn't to win a trade. You don't get a trophy for winning a trade. You don't get money for winning a trade. It's to make your team better. If you make your team better, then you won the trade. But both sides could win the trade by that logic. If you don't make your team better with a trade, don't do the trade. Trading for the sake of trading, some people just love that and they're going to hate on what I'm saying right now, and that's fine. Do what they can do what they want to do. But I don't make trades unless it benefits my team. And if it's a push, like even if it doesn't make my team like worse, if it's a push and it doesn't truly make my team better, then I'm not going to do it. And I find that more often than not, that's what happens. I also find a lot of people right now, after they drafted, they made mistakes in their draft and they try to fix those mistakes with trades, which is like trying to dig yourself out of a hole with a shovel. You're only going to dig yourself deeper. You know, you're going to create another weakness by trying to address your perceived weakness, and it doesn't work. So the better thing to do there is to realize what you did wrong in the draft and try and avoid it in the future, as opposed to trying to trade. I wouldn't use trade value charts either. He's mentioned a trade value chart here. Why? Because every league is going to be different in trades. I'm in one home league, and some of those folks listen to this podcast, and you know who I'm talking about here, where trades are, they happen all the time. Like, you can get a trade done very easily in that league. I'm in another league, another home league, where trades never happen. Like, we haven't had a trade in 5 years. Like, you have to give away your firstborn child in order to get a trade done in that league. So each league, the same offer would not be perceived the same way across these two leagues. It really depends on your league. So good stuff there, John. Appreciate you. All right, let's go over to Jordan here. He has emailed in the past, but he said he needs to drop one of these players before week one. Ah, I know what you did. Yeah, this is tough. So he probably didn't draft a defense. I don't know, man. As of right now, I don't have an answer for you. Here are his options. Keon Coleman, Jameson Williams, and Xavier Worthy. Like all of those guys are top 50 guys for me. I don't have an answer for you right now. Let's come back before week one. Fortunately, we still have, you know, just under 2 weeks until then. But man, this is the one problem when you don't draft a defense in leagues where you're not required to do so. You may not have a droppable player, but here you could potentially, this would be one instance where you could look to package players to potentially, you know, do a 2-for-1. And then that would open up the roster spot as opposed to just dropping one of these dudes. Because I really wouldn't want to drop any of them. Eric, Old Man League help. For new listeners too, an Old Man League is a league that doesn't change its settings, doesn't change its scoring, has done the same exact thing since 1997, right? All right, he said, longtime Rat Packer from Twitter. Nice. He said he is in a 12-team Old Man League. Joined last year. It's drafting this weekend, and he's checking if he needs to make slight changes to the strategy. All right. The league, there are roster limits. Aha, yes, that's an old man feature right there. Quarterback, 2 running back, 3 wide out, tight end. They have kicker, defense, and flex, but no more than 6 wide receivers or running backs. No more than 2 quarterbacks or tight ends, obviously kicker and defense as well. Do I approach it the same way or modify the strategy? No, I'd approach this the exact same way. Like if your limitations were different, maybe, but even then, like I'm thinking like really extreme, and I don't think anybody has really extreme limitations. Now, 6 is fine, and I would probably have 6 really good wide receivers, but nah, I wouldn't change the strategy for this one. All right, last one. This is from Erica. She says she's a big fan of the Sirius show and this pod. Appreciate you, Erica. 10-team Superflex has a top 4 pick in the draft, but not sure which spot yet. 2 keepers, leaning Breece Hall in the first and Bijan in the second. However, it would cause her to be thin at wide receiver. I do agree with you there. The other options, Mark Andrews in the 5th, Jordan Love in the last, Jaden Reed in the last. No other options? Oof. keeping Breece Hall at four overall is rough. I would likely toss him back. I think Bijan in the second is solid, rock solid. You don't have any other wide receivers to keep, then, man, I'm torn here because I do have Jaden Reed ranked ahead of Jordan Love, but I if I'm keeping somebody, I want him to be a little bit more premium than Jaden Reed. So I would I'm tossing Breece back. I'm tossing Breece back. I would love to see who else you have here. If you have anybody else who's like kind of on value at wide receiver in the fourth, you have Andrews in the fifth. So in the sixth, seventh, eighth, like who else do you have? And I would give that serious consideration because I agree with you, Erica, that you're going to be thin at wide receiver. Worst case scenario, you know, Love isn't terrible. I don't want to keep a quarterback if I can get away with it, but Love in the last round isn't terrible. I'd be a little reluctant with Reed, though, just because they do have, like, basically they have four viable wide receivers with Wicks in the mix there, too. All right, that's it. I cleared it all out. The inbox is empty. The rantpodjr@gmail.com. I'm going to do some content from the Farm League draft, so keep your eyes peeled for that on Instagram, @JeffRatcliffe. My wife was so right, by the way. There's no shot I get to 10,000 followers on Instagram. You can follow along on Twitter as well, @JeffRatcliffe. FTNFantasy.com. One way you can help this pod out is by going and getting a subscription over there at FTNFantasy.com. Promo code RATPACK for 10% off. Hook it up, and I'll hook you up. Like I said, I'm updating cheat sheets first thing in the morning tomorrow, and we're off to the races there. So enjoy your weekend, man. If you have a draft, crush it. No mercy, man. No mercy. Crush those opponents. And then otherwise, I'll be back on Monday for another edition of the pod. I will catch you on the flip side. I'm Jeff, and I'm out.